2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is my longtime co-host, Dylan White. No Jacob Rudner this week. It feels like I'm alternating co-hosts from week to week. One of these days, we're going to have all three of us together and form like Voltron into a fantasy beast, a demigod, so to speak. So, Dylan, let me ask you, because this is the first official off-season podcast that we've recorded. Certainly, the minors has been done for a little bit. But fantasy leagues, officially, for the most part, unless you have some weird league that ends a little bit early, came to a close on Sunday. We're now into playoff baseball. Before we talk about that, did you win any of your leagues? How did you make out this year? I did not win anything.
I thought I had a bad year, and I actually made money. The big thing was the auction championship we won, the one with Jordan Rosenblum and Brian Slack. We won that, held on, and got nail-bitingly close at one point where we were hitting like 180 and not getting any wins. But we held on, so we won that, so that was good. My two dynasty leagues I won, which was very good too. Kind of almost post-to-post. It was pretty good, but the DCs, the ones where I thought this is where I'm gonna flourish, did not win a single league.
Oh,
it was like second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, eighth, something like that. I know it's a common refrain. Everyone got hit by injuries, but that's what happened to us. Losing a whole bunch of people, and then just couldn't. We were up ahead, like we were winning a bunch of them, and then it just like saw us slowly bleeding down and no win. So actually, from a result, like from a money standpoint, it was successful. Just didn't feel like successful. I felt like I was kind of floundering, but not too bad.
Yeah, I had my home league, which is like a 12-team head-to-head points league. I just didn't have it this year. Like I started really hot and then it just tanked. That league does end a little bit early because they don't like the craziness of the last couple of weeks. So, I did not make the playoffs in that league for the first time in a few years, and did make some trades though at the deadline. I ended up getting McGonagall as well as a few other players that will be decent keepers. And the way this league works is if you have a player in the minors that then you promote up, he's then free for a couple of years. So a guy like McGonagall, you know, if it clicks, and especially in a points league where like his kind of game is like perfect because he does a little bit of everything. He runs enough. He's got enough power, but he really doesn't strike out, and he walks and he hits for a high average and could hit at the top of a lineup and score some runs and drive in some runs, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'll take some solace in that. My big league is my RAS 30 league. Like that's my favorite league. That is a 30-team points league kind of modeled after MLB where there's an AL and an NL. All the teams are, you know, actual MLB teams. I have the Cincinnati Reds, built this team up. We sort of ran it end to end in the National League side. I did end up winning some money because I won the regular season title. So I guess once again, like I'll take some positive out of that. We then go into a head to head playoffs, which is obviously chaos. Eked out the first, the whatever quarterfinal round or whatever you want to call it, the ALD, the NLDS, made it to the NLCS. Really, really close. If I had played Nick Martinez as one of my relief spots, because I have a bunch of relievers between like the way the league works, you can kind of have some guys in the minors. So I'm always swapping relievers and kind of playing like who's pitched well lately, but also like who's on two days rest, like, and is probably going to get some work. If I had pitched Nick Martinez, I would have got the win that day. And it would have pushed me into the World Series for the first time. So, you know, this has been a very long rebuild of like a bad team that I took over. So I made it to the NLCS and, you know, I guess technically finished third and did win the regular season title. So I made some money. So wasn't too bad. I guess I took care of like the hard part, winning the Roto League over the large portion of the season, but too many injuries to my pitching, and I had some bats go like really, really cold for me in the playoffs. Like Francisco Lindor wasn't hitting that week, and the week before that, and a few other guys. It was like Christopher Morel was like one of my most consistent hitters, which is just like not a good sign if your team is like an, and the funny thing is like, it's like an offensive juggernaut. Like I'm fairly loaded offensively. So that one was tough. I had another league I just finished outside the money, and a few others that kind of mediocre, and I have too many leagues that I'm definitely dropping it down to five next year. I don't plan on doing any expert leagues any longer either. So, which is, I guess, my official announcement. I'm going to retire from tout, but like, I can't keep up with it, you know, with the amount of other stuff that I'm doing. And like, I want to focus and like do well in the leagues that I'm in. Right. Like, and I had hit a point of just, you know, diminishing returns over like the last 3 or 4 years, I feel, because I just say yes too often. So there you go. All right. Well, we got some playoff baseball though. Your Jays have not played yet. I'm cheering for the Guardians this year, my boy. So they did tie it up. They did tie it up today. So it's 1-1. We have three series right now. The first three series, Cubs and Padres, Tigers and Guardians, and Red Sox and Yankees are all going to a decisive game three in the wild card round. I think that's pretty fun. As we're watching this, the Reds are leading the Dodgers in the bottom of the fourth, but it is the Dodgers and it's only a 1-run lead. So we don't know how safe that lead is. It wouldn't shock me if this series ends up ending this evening, but we shall see. So I don't know if you've dug into any playoff baseball, just kind of a fun topic. We obviously don't have to get too into the nitty gritty here, but I think there's been some entertaining games for the most part. And, you know, the Dodgers game didn't look like it was going to be entertaining last night, but the Dodgers bullpen does a great job of making sure every game is very entertaining. And I would say, looking at the two World Series teams from last year, Dylan, the bullpens kind of seem to be the Achilles heel of both the Dodgers and the Yankees. And it's kind of funny when you think about it, because both of these teams did spend quite a bit of capital, whether that be free agent dollars or trade assets, to acquire and sort of fortify those bullpens. And they have not gotten the results you'd expect based upon the level of talent and just depth in each of those units.
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, the Yankees, who I'm hoping will battle with the Red Sox in a 28 inning marathon game,
the longest game ever
that tires them all out before they face the Jays. Yeah, I mean, they got Bednar and Fernando Cruz and Jake Bird, and like none of them. I mean, Bednar, I guess, has been pretty good. Fernando Cruz has been fine, but it was shaky for a while. And then obviously the Dodgers with Tanner Scott's well-documented travails, not looking great either. But yeah, it's funny. It's just funny how, you know, there's the momentum or it's getting hot at the right moment. And yeah, it's just, baseball's a funny game. Just ask the Met fans.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say that I am somebody that, I do enjoy the expanded format. I really like this opening sort of series. And then knowing in the divisional round, we're going to have four more series to watch, right? So, you know, that kind of makes it fun where there's sort of like, you know, this, you know, concentration of games over a really short period of time with a bunch of good teams and a bunch of good players. And you can kind of just sit here on your couch almost like a Sunday for football and just watch four really good games, you know. Yeah. I think if you're a baseball fan, this is ideal. And it's playoff baseball. All these games matter. And, you know, I will say, like, I love baseball. 162 games is a drag. It's a really long season. And there's chunks in time during the season where, you know, not that games are meaningless, but you know, you're sort of going through the motions, right? Like you're just trying to keep pace with the marathon, where at this point, you know, it is full on sprint time. So we just see things managed differently. You see heroic performances, guys crumble in big moments. It's just, you know, it's the reason that we watch this game is for this sort of excitement, right? So Yeah, and I think it's fun because the last week of the season now, it always seems like there's some games that are in play in the last couple of days of the year, that there aren't sort of these empty couple of games leading into the playoffs, which can make for some bad baseball. Sunday was an awesome day. There were a ton of games that mattered for seedings or for just teams making the playoffs or not, and being able to sit there and watch big inning for like 4 or 5, like, you know, hours, and just digging into games and, you know, kind of ignoring football a little bit was kind of a fun day. So, you know, I'm going to take it for what it is. Friday will be another drag, though, with like no sports on and me like not knowing what the heck to do with myself. So going to have to figure that out in a couple of days, but that's 48 hours away. But let's talk a little bit about some content that you put out over the last couple of weeks, a couple of very good articles, actually this week. Couple of underrated minor leaguers on the hitting side and the pitchers. With traits to target, we're digging into data in these articles, of course. Dylan did both of them. Excellent work by you. I want to drill you now with a couple of different names. We're going to start with some hitters first off. And I was going to go dealer's choice on you, but I'm going to throw one at you right away. And that's Ethan Frey, who I think we might have talked about in recent weeks. I think that he is a major ascending name in FYPE. You know, you just hope that it doesn't get too high where, you know, he's ranked like 16th or something. And it's like, all right, like all the value has been sucked out of it. But if you're in deeper leagues like me and you're looking for a name, maybe in that 25 to sort of 40, 45 range in FYPDs, I think Frey is actually a really good target. And I don't think it's unreasonable to maybe prefer him to some more first round names, whether that be like a Weeha Loy, or even an Ike Irish for that matter. I think Frey showed some really interesting traits and obviously does have a high level track record in terms of hitting at LSU.
Yeah, I think, not that it's an exploitable inefficiency or anything, but like the best performing professional debuts last year were like Nick Kurtz and Cam Smith. Yeah, the year before was Wyatt Langford, basically. So it's like whoever comes out of the gate, comes out of the chute in their professional debuts and does well, are good guys to target. And Frey, like you said, did exactly that. And it's not just he, you know, hit out of 175 WRC plus or whatever it was. It's like under the hood. It's the Statcast data. That's the thing that we're looking at here. And so he had plus contact. And then when he made contact, he had a 108 mile an hour, 90th percentile exit velocity, which is very good. So he's making contact and then he's doing damage on that contact. His swing decisions are good. They're better than average. His chase, he chases less than the rest of the league. His feral rates are good. So he's hitting at the right angle. So like everything is kind of clicking. So yes, he's 21 in low A, which is sort of the average age. So, you know, he kind of should be, you know, performing, but it's like under the hood, which was my famous refrain in the article. Basically everybody I was saying under the hood, is excellent. It's you know, the top of the league in terms of performance, even when you kind of regress like the barrel rates and all that. So yeah, I think he's maybe he's not going to be so sneaky because we've talked about him. The two of us have talked about him for a couple weeks now. I saw James Anderson just updated his prospect list and has him like 221 or something like that, or in the low 200s. So it's not like he's going to be like a fifth round guy you can steal. It seems like there's a bit of helium happening, and as well there should be.
Yeah, I just think, you know, if we start to get into like 15 to like 20 range, then it's probably like there's not a lot of value at that point. Like then you're kind of, you're picking among some other names where it's like, eh, I may want to play the upside here. Next one that I want to throw at you is Junior Caceres from the Guardians. I think this guy is phenomenal. Plate skills are really, really good. He looks like one of the biggest names that will come off the complex this year. What are your thoughts on Caceres?
Yeah, he was big last year because he was like in his age 16 season. So he was actually near the top of the DSL. And that's with guys like Ryan Rodriguez and Jesus Mate, Emil Morales. because he was so young and doing well, was ranked high, and there was thump in the bat too. He had a 101 mile an hour exit velocity. He had plus to double plus contact, sort of a Guardian's trait. And he was so young and he was doing that. So like the only thing kind of holding him back is he's like 5'10", 5'11". He's not like those 6'4" Adonis types that you kind of look for. So it's like he kind of naturally gets dinged by those who are doing the eye test or, you know, kind of traditional scouts. But he just continued on in the age 17 season this year. He's still plus to double plus contact. He has a 105 mile an hour exit velocity now. So he really added a bunch of thump. And like I said, he's 17. They're not at the great angles. And so I think, like, I've read people saying, oh, I hope that, you know, he can develop some power and all that. And because they don't have access to seeing, like, the miles per hour he's getting on the bat, they're just seeing the home run totals aren't so great. But there's a lot of power in the bat, especially for someone who's 17. And so, like, it looks like he can play in a corner. He's going to hit for average. He's going to get on base. He's going to have, 20-plus home run power, I think, pretty easily, considering he's in full season ball. He's only 17. I really like that name, and I could see him pushing top 100 even on traditional lists sometime in the middle of next season.
Yeah, I think that's all really interesting, and I think that was a great point that you made just regarding the power, because we know that the underlying exit velocity data is well above average, especially for agent level. It's a few standard deviations above average that I would say is probably plus underlying exit velocities. I would tend to believe that this is a guy, especially with the plate skills that he has, that there's going to be some room for, like, some error bars there for adjustments in terms of adding more loft. And if it comes with a little bit more swing and miss, I think you're going to take that. And especially a guy this young, if he's showing all those traits and you know that he can hit and put together a really quality at bat, that buys him some leeway to kind of find those angles, right? And it's just a matter of finding enough of those angles or getting into some pull side pop with the underlying power, which I'm sure that's something they're going to do. Let's go to the pitching side here. Let's go with Wee-Yen Lin, left-hander from the Athletics, had a pretty decent year. I know RoboScout likes him. In your article, which actually went over 13 different underrated minor league pitchers with traits to target, check that on at baseballamerica.com. You like him quite a bit, and you dig into the stuff a little bit. So talk to me about what you're seeing under the hood and how excited we should be about Lin.
Yeah, so he started off hot. He was one of the guys that I was desperate to see the underlying data right from the outset, because he had like a 0% walk rate after three or four starts. He was young for the level, just kind of dominating. And when I saw that his fastball averaged like 91 miles an hour, I kind of got deflated a bit, because I was hoping this is a guy who's hitting 96 and his slider has 16 inches of horizontal sweep or something like that. But it wasn't that. So it looked like, oh, okay, this guy's just a pitchability guy. Oh, this guy has international stage experience. And so he's just kind of picking off these lower level hitters. But he made it to Double-A as a 19-year-old. And under the hood, like, there's a lot of unique traits to what he throws. He has above average extension. He does average 91 miles an hour, which is not fast, but he has 18 inches of IVB. He throws it pretty flat. He throws it a lot and pounds the zone with it. And he has an above average miss rate with it. And like I said, he's 19. He pitched low A, high A, and even a couple stints in Double A. And he gets chases. So he pounds the zone. They don't really hit it that well when it's in the zone. And then when it's out of the zone, they chase it like an 80 grade rate, 44% chase rate when the average is 23%. And then I talk about his slider, which has sort of plus IVB. And that's kind of a unique set of traits. When you throw a slider, you can the gyro sliders or a bullet slider or the sweeper type sliders. And this one's kind of more cutterish in that it has plus IVB, and there's not that much, not track record, but it isn't that common to have a plus IVB, especially of 7.5 inches. If you look at the MLB Baseball Savant list for sliders and you kind of sort by IVB, that's like, it would have been 15th highest in the majors. And I mentioned in the article, it's like that's tied with Paul Skeens and Clayton Kershaw, who have pretty good sliders. So he has these unique traits already at age 19. So it's not just a guy who is throwing slop and junk and these lower level hitters can hit it. He's got some interesting traits. So I got very excited when I dug into the data and I saw what he actually had. So I'm far more optimistic than I was at the beginning of this season. even though he kind of tailed off a bit and his walk rate went up a bit, but because I really like what's in the tool set. So I think he, being so young, and the Athletics have a pretty good track record right now developing pitchers and hitters. I think there's a high chance that he may be successful in the major leagues.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's an interesting pitch mix, and especially if you can add a little bit of power, because he is pretty young, that it's totally possible. So he's one to watch, I think, especially when you see there's pitchability and a variety of good shapes and unique traits, and traits that, you know, kind of portend maybe an expanding arsenal and different types of pitches that he can throw and, you know, translate that, those traits successfully into, you know, new pitch shapes and success in a deeper arsenal, which is something I think we're seeing more and more with teams. Let's take a quick break here, Dylan. When we come back, we're going to talk about another pitcher that has a really deep arsenal and some good traits who could be in the major leagues next season.
Getting the right people in the door quick is critical to maintain your company's workflow. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it puts the best and most qualified candidates in front of you quickly. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, and we are back. I teased a name before the break, and I'm going to throw it at you right now. That's Trey Gipson of the Orioles. He had an excellent season, made his way all the way up to AAA, pitched really well, mixes like 5 or 6 different pitch shapes, and uses all of them at least 10% of the time or more. I don't think he throws anything more than 30%. And there's a lot of quality within the arsenal. I would say nothing that is a plus pitch, but he has a few above average pitches and everything is kind of average to fringe average or better. So talk to me a little bit about Trey Gipson. And is he a sleeper maybe for a wide variety of leagues, maybe a DC next year? Because he could be a guy that potentially could get some innings with the Orioles.
I think so. I think so for sure. I picked him up in both of my dynasty leagues. I was kind of a Braxton Bragg guy at the beginning of the year. He got injured. And then, we had Trey Gipson on the Hot Sheet show, and he's just like a student of the game and he cares about the metrics and he's always trying to improve. He's always trying to learn. I really like that. He just was consistent and just kept improving as the season went on. Like you said, he has a wide arsenal, and I like the fact that he's looking at the metrics. He's trying to improve. He's trying to improve the shapes. He's trying to improve the sequencing. He may not have a plus pitch, but he gets, you know, above average chase or above average whiff on basically everything that he throws. Four seam fastball, he throws 30% of the time. It sits 94. It has plus IVB. It has above average miss. His next most popular pitch is his cutter, which he throws at 89 miles an hour. That has, for something that fast, the amount of horizontal break is 5 inches, which is a pretty good combination. That doesn't happen that much. He has a sweeper that's 84 miles an hour, which is like right on the fringe of that magic 85 mile an hour you want for sliders. It has 16 inches of horizontal break, which is pretty ridiculous. That's an 84 mile an hour sweeper with 16 inches of horizontal break is kind of what Luis Severino does. I mentioned in the article that on Fangraph Stuff Model, Luis Severino's sweeper is a 133 stuff plus. So it has the metrics. It's not getting the whiffs that that you would expect from something that great, but he gets a lot of chases, and it's plus metrically from the stuff perspective. So I'm sure right-handers are going to have a hard time with it. He throws a curveball 17% of the time. He also throws another shaped slider. So he's got a whole bunch of secondaries of breaking stuff, and they're all good. So I think, back to your original question, is he someone for DC? I think so. I think the Orioles have been pretty vocal that they want to improve their starting pitching. That was sort of their big Achilles heel this year. Corbin Burnes went down, obviously. Grayson Rodriguez went down. Trevor Rogers was a revelation, but they want to be pretty active in the market. So someone like Trey Gibson may play a very active role for the Orioles in 2026. So I have him in my dynasty leagues, like I said, and I'm hoping to get a whole bunch of contributions from him next year.
Yeah, I think he is a really interesting name, and somebody that I think this offseason I'm going to try to acquire, you know, where I can. You know, deeper leagues, probably not going to happen, but you never know. Bigger trades, maybe get him as a throw-in. And I think there is some value, especially if you have the ability to stash somebody like that in your minors and move him back and forth when he's starting, and, you know, maybe pick, you know, kind of play mix and match with, you know, another starter in the minors, similar type of guy. But here, let's go with a bat here. We're going to talk about a Cardinals breakout this season, and it's not Josh Baez. That is Daniel Ortiz, D-E-N-I-E-L, for those out there. It's actually Daniel Ortiz, but I'll say Daniel Ortiz, so that way you know what I'm talking about. Dylan, you have him on your nine hitters, underrated hitters with trades to target. Talk to me a little bit about why Ortiz made the cut, and what are your expectations for him next year?
Yeah, halfway through the season, he started popping up on the RoboScout lists, and he was sort of a power speed blend. He was okay in terms of like age for the level. It was just like there was not much on him. But if you look under the, he just continued all the way. He got promoted to high A as a 20-year-old. But it's the Statcast that's pretty interesting, because he has a 104 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity, which is plus for age and level. His barrel rates are plus. Those are very predictive of, you know, future power. And so he's hitting it hard, and he's hitting it at the good levels or good angles. He doesn't chase. And so the swing percentages, swing decisions are pretty good. It's just the contact is, you know, average, fringe average, but, you know, if you want, it's better to be fringe average on contact, but plus or above average on power than the other way around, in terms of, you know, WRC plus and offensive contribution. And so he has that. So his projection from RoboScout is he's an above average major league hitter, with 20 to 25 home runs and basically 20 stolen bases right now. I don't know if that'll continue. He's probably a third baseman. So he'll probably add some weight and strength and maybe slow down a bit. So I wouldn't count on him for 20 stolen bases, but, you know, he has the capacity to do so. So I could see him doing 10 in the major leagues if he makes it to the majors. So it was just a name that's really kind of unsung and not really on the map, but he produced, and the stat cast underneath supports the production. It's not smoke and mirrors. So he fits to a T the idea of being someone underrated.
Yeah, I find him to be one of the more interesting pop-up names in this Cardinal system that had a few. Like, you know, obviously I mentioned Baez, but I think Ortiz is definitely, you know, worthy of the praise that you heaped on him. Last guy I'm going to throw at you here, and then we'll wrap this sucker up. What about Henry Mendez? He's going to AFL. I feel like he's got a lot of buzz just throughout the industry based upon the kind of season that he had and then what the numbers are going to say as well.
Yeah, so Henry Mendez is a guy who has been good at contact for a long time and been young for the level for a long time. It was always just the ground ball rate has been very high his entire career. I think he started with the Brewers, and I remember he was young, kind of in the lower levels, and I really kept my eye on him because he was popping on the RoboScout list just because his contact was so high, so advanced compared to everyone else. It just, he didn't have the power, was it going to manifest, etc., and he just could not get the ground ball rate up. This year, whereas his minor league career has been around 60% ground ball rate, which is just too high, he was at like 50%, and it looked like some things have changed. And he started hitting, like, he had a couple home runs. He's got double-digit home runs for the first time this year. And he was traded at the deadline to the Twins. And I kind of got this sense that the Twins kind of were not targeting him, but, you know, they kind of liked him as the return. But then he kind of regressed back to his ground ball ways again. But his contact rates and his in-zone contact are, like, plus to double plus. They're very good. His 90th percentile exit velocities are actually quite high. They're 104.8 miles an hour. His max is 113. Like, he's got thump in the bat. He doesn't chase that well, that much at all either. Like, everything's there except the ground ball rate. His launch angles are not great, so the damage on contact isn't that great, but we saw flashes of his ability to do so. So he can handle the bat. He can hit it with authority. He doesn't chase. He makes the right swing decisions. I compare his data, and it's basically identical to Max Clark, although Max Clark's 1 year younger. I'm not suggesting Henry Mendez is Max Clark, but he has sort of all the ingredients that you want in the recipe for a good hitter. It's just sort of the launch angle. So he was the last name I put on this list because I'm like, I don't want to go out on a limb and say that this guy is going to be great, but all the ingredients are there. I don't know if he's able to manifest that change and make that change, but, you know, he has the bat to make it to the majors. The question is he going to, you know, hit for enough power to be a regular? And I'm not sure, but he definitely has the ability.
Yeah. I think it's like one of those interesting names. Like in some ways there's almost like parallels to like Yandy Diaz when he was coming up. And I think in some ways, like, he made that transition. In other ways, didn't, but was like always a valuable real life player and fantasy player. And there might be more defensive value with Mendez than there is with Yandy. So kind of interesting, but like a similar problem. All right. I think those are some great names. There are a whole, we only covered, you know, a fraction of the names here that Dylan covered. We covered six in total. You covered what, 22 names between the pitchers and the hitters. So, you know, quite a bit there to dig into. I encourage you to go over to baseballamerica.com and check out Dylan's articles. And as always, thank you for reading. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week.
Cheers.